Can't imagine what we're doing. That's interesting.
Folks, I'd like to call the community services meeting to order. It is 3:00, and we have a rather long but interesting agenda. So I'm Councilwoman Diller, co-chairing this afternoon, and we are joined here at the table by Council President Hartley Nagel, and then Council Members Kilpatrick and Tackett and Carter and Bell and Durham and Cartier and Woods, Smiley, and my aide, Mary Lee DeCaro.
Tim Sheldon.
And Mr. Sheldon. Excellent. Okay.
No. I didn't get an end.
And Mr. Smiley. Did I miss anyone else?
Penrose.
Ah, okay. My senior colleague. May I have a motion on the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes of January 22nd.
Do we have a second? We do. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We have two ordinances, both dealing with the summer youth program. Is there someone from community services that will be speaking to that? Yes, Mr. Henry, please enlighten us.
Sure. Good afternoon. Marcus Henry, General Manager of our Department of Community Services. These first two ordinances 19-108 and ordinance 19-109, deal with our Department of Labor grant awards for our summer youth employment program, both for $74,000 and $104,000. We're very happy about that. For those councilmembers who may not know, this is for funding for salary and benefits for youth ages 14 through 20. Our Division of Community Resources administers this program and provides the necessary oversight, including placing youth in work opportunities where the youth gain employment skills and training. On the previous two Saturdays, both March 9th and March 23rd, our division held its application processing event for youth and their guardians. And we had over 1,300 youth and their parents show up to attend these events, and their applications are currently being reviewed and processed. As we count right now, we have 705 applications pending for summer jobs, which is 182 more than we had last year. We plan to hire, with the allocation of the project both from the various sources of funding, between 210 and 215 youth served this year. Last year was a record. We did 200 youth that were served last summer, 2018. Our division and others have identified over 73 potential sites for youth to work at. These include private offices, libraries, senior centers, and the school district. Employers include Newcastle County, of course, State Delaware Department of Health and Social Services, various YMCA sites, and Habitat for Humanity, just to name a few. And as council remembers previously, it's about $2,800 is needed to support each summer youth employment in terms of salary and benefits. Each youth may work up to 250 hours during the program period of June 17th through August 23rd.
All right, thank you. And those will be voted on tonight. Are there any questions for Mr. Henry? All right, moving, yes, Mr. Smiley.
Not a question, but just council's ordinance allocating $100,000, which this council began setting aside in their annual budget, will be being introduced to be approved at the next council meeting for the program as well.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the next four ordinances that will be introduced. That would be 19-029 through 19-032. Mr. Henry, are you the appropriate person to walk us through these?
Yes.
All right.
This ordinance appropriates $116,300 in funds from the West End Neighborhood House, who received the grant funding from the Youth Workforce Fund, which is part of the City Foundation to Progress Initiative, to help to reduce youth unemployment through training access to jobs. We project to assist 40 youth with this new funding in place. Actually, second year, I should say. The program is intended to improve and expand existing services for youth ages 16 through 24 by exploring and identifying career pathways and pre-employment soft skills training and matching youth with work experience opportunities in their chosen career pathways. Newcastle County uses these funds for career counseling, job training, and summer job placement for these 40 youth, in the city of Wilmington across Newcastle County. These funds have also been delegated for supportive staff to serve as mentors, and to work with the worksite partners throughout this program. This program actually runs through October 31st, 2019. This is the second year we're successful with West End in terms of getting this funding.
Excellent. Are there any questions for Mr. Henry on this ordinance? No. Moving on. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay.
19-030.
Yeah, this ordinance is general housekeeping for our county's very successful neighborhood stabilization program. These are funds that have been revolving for over 10 years thanks to the great work of our community development housing under leadership of Ms. Carrie Casey. We're basically just moving money from the acquisition grant line to our contractual grant line so we can use these funds to rehab three homes in the Edgemoor community. These three houses were actually buybacks from the sheriff's sale, meaning there was no bidders. We'll be renovating these properties, and we'll be putting a 15-year deed restriction on these for home ownership. I want to recognize Sheriff Scott Phillips here today with us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for coming. Appreciate that. We have a long track record with NSP in leveraging these funds. I mean, I don't go through all the details, but I mean, just over the 10-year period under Carrie's leadership, I think for most time, we've done over 355 properties that have been assisted with this leverage funding. So we're happy to tackle these three houses in the Edgemoor community.
Mr. Cartier.
Thank you. So my understanding is that you're going to have a different process for renovation, too. You're going to not go with a nonprofit housing organization. Maybe you can explain how you're going to conduct the renovation process.
We will serve as the developer for this project, and we work with our division of purchasing on the list of contractors. We're actually about to go out to bid to identify a whole new list of contractors through the division of purchasing. So we've been developing properties on our own probably for 5 years.
Yeah.
Because when we revolve this money and we keep revolving it, you know, we lose a little bit on every house. So we feel like we had a good model that we could do it ourselves. So this actually saves, because we don't earn a developer's fee off of this.
Right.
This is just straight development of the property. So yes, we will be. And then we sell it using one of our real estate agents that we get from our purchasing department. And then all the proceeds come back to the county so we can keep doing what we're doing. All the money has to be, that comes back, goes right back into the pot. And as Marcus said, we've been able to collect over, that'll be $12.5 million from the original grant award of $13.4 million. So we're keeping this going as long as we possibly can.
Now yes. We know why our community services department is number one in the state.
Indeed. President Hartley Nagel, then Mr. Smiley.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could share with me how much do we lose? I recently attended a bond meeting for the city of Wilmington, and the mayor had said they lose approximately maybe $30,000. Is that, and I wasn't aware that you lose money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, each, and how is it, there's an average that we're losing, and about how much is that?
Carrie Casey with the Department of Community Services. We, as some of these most distressed communities that we work in, the price of acquiring the property and renovating the property, it far exceeds the market rate of what that house will sell for. And so the subsidy, the gap, which is, you know, it can be anywhere, now I think the mayor, I think he's being a little modest about amount, but it can be anywhere between $35,000 and $50,000. But, you know, you can't really, in our opinion, in terms of the work that we do, the fact we're putting a 15-year deed restriction that the home remain home ownership. So for 15 years, that home will remain a home ownership unit. And there's an actual deed restriction. That is the price of that gap. Now, we've seen in some neighborhoods, we're working in Route 9, especially in Route 9, we've done so many properties, 65 in there. We've actually seen the private market begin to take over. So we aren't able to actually, because there are people, we think the private market's actually seeing that there's a market for this type of redevelopment. So we aren't able to buy properties in there for the price that we can afford to buy them and acquire them and still not lose our shirts on them, basically. So that's a good scenario that we can move into some of the other neighborhoods that we work in, one of them being Edgemoor Gardens or some of the areas that surround some of the communities that we've worked in Route 9. But there's definitely a gap. That's why the private market aren't going into these distressed communities, because you can't make money off of them.
Right, I think the average person thinks that we're making money.
Oh, gosh, no.
Off of them, and I'm hearing that that's, it's the opposite.
Right, it's the opposite, but.
But it's having a very beneficial effect in the communities overall.
You cannot put a price on helping sustain a community for homeownership.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in some of those communities where it's really teetering on the edge there.
Thank you.
Councilman Smiley.
Isn't most of this work done, like with this, with the federal funds that we get? So the loss that's incurred, really, it's the investment of the federal funds.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. So although all funds relative to government come from taxpayers, this isn't the local tax money that's being invested to help improve there that we're not recovering.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly really the intent
right.
of those federal funds.
Without that, we wouldn't be able to do it.
Exactly right. And back when this first program started in 2008, HUD came down and told us, treat this like a hurricane has hit your neighborhood, but it's a foreclosure crisis. Do that. Treat it like that and bring those houses up to that market rate so you're helping increase, you're stabilizing the neighborhood by making that house, you know, a beautiful property that somebody would want to buy at a market rate value. But, you know, the gap is what is being used, and it's all federal money. We've been able to get some state grants to do it. So we're continuing to try to keep this program going from one-time funding that we received back, and it's been like almost over 10 years that we have received.
And the point being, while maybe we're investing in federal dollars and not recovering and making a profit, and people, granted, some will not like that idea. Those communities where they're in, those people eventually begin to see the benefit of that as their property value, so long as they maintain their property, begins to uptick. And the more the investors show the interest in coming in, the more valuable the properties become. So I can't wait for you to come into my slum.
President Hartley-Nagel.
One more follow-up question. In the paper, it appears that we've lost federal funds. Has that affected this program? And if so, how much?
Well, you know, Carrie Casey, the money that we received, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, was one-time funding. So we were never expected to continue to get this. Our home funds, which we also use for this type of work, we've been able, I mean, in the last few years, last six years, we've lost 50% of our funding, but we've been able to build that up. And, you know, again, we have to look at other sources of funding. We've really been successful in applying. We've been one of the big grantees for the state's bank settlement money that they receive, that they call that Strong Neighborhood Housing Fund. So we're able to supplement some of our federal money with the state money. We've also applied for federal home loan bank money. You know, we're trying to look outside the box and apply for different funding because, yes, the federal, we can't depend on the federal government alone on this.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any other?
Just to add anecdotally, you know, we are concerned about the president's proposed budget right now for HUD-VA appropriations. They're talking about zeroing out our home funds, reducing community block grant funds. Although we don't think it's likely because of the composition of Congress right now with respect to the House, it is of concern. I mean, there was a press conference the last week that Senator Coons and I know County Executive Byer attended, but that's something we're carefully monitoring in terms of the White House proposed budget. Just keep that on your radar.
Thank you.
Mr. Henry, if you want to give us some information about 19031 and 032, they appear to be companion ordinances.
Yes, these are two companion ordinances that are introduced each year, basically as housekeeping items again. These ordinances appropriate anticipated program income and funding to support our scholarships for the summer recreation camp program from the Community Development Block Grant Fund budget and also our operating budget. The purpose of this funding is to serve low to moderate income children with the opportunity to attend a summer camp program. In the summer of 2018, approximately 106 scholarships were awarded from both federal and county funding. Unfortunately, due to the limited federal dollars, the county community partnership funds will also be utilized for scholarships. In addition, program income is anticipated to be received for this program from tuition payments from children who are in the program but do not qualify for financial assistance. The fiscal impact of this ordinance, if approved, would be an increase to the grant's budget of $205,000. So it's $64,800 in county match funds for months, and the program income we anticipate of $190,200.
Any questions? All right, please note those ordinances are being introduced tonight, but they will not be voted on until April 9th. Mr. Henry, continuing with updates. Vacant housing?
I will defer to my colleague, Chief of Staff, Andrea Almond, for the update on vacant housing annual report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcus, and thank you to the community services co-chairs. It's been a couple of months since you have seen us come in and talk about the vacant housing program. And so we wanted to take just a couple of minutes. I know it's a day that is very busy, lots of agenda items today. I wanted to take a couple of minutes to share some highlights with you of an annual report that we will, within the next week, be releasing publicly. But we wanted to share some of the highlights with council today. So I have a handful of slides to share with you, but also wanted to distribute a draft version of the summary of this, what will be a 14-15 page report. But we thought a summary version might also be helpful. That would be great. And so we come back before this body that has been tremendously supportive of our overall vacant housing initiative. And what we wanted to do as we rounded the corner from 2018 was to really take a look at what was the program impact in 2018. As you will recall, we spent a lot of 2017 and early part of 2018 working on legislative fixes that we needed, and really appreciate the support of this body as well as the work with our state legislators to add more tools into the toolbox for vacant housing. You've heard from Carrie about some of the impacts that we're going to be starting to see on the back end of the program. And so what we wanted to do was pause and take a look at 2018 overall in terms of the numbers, in terms of and the impacts that we're starting to see. So again, I won't do this in tremendous detail, but because you'll be receiving the report before it goes public. And so I've handed out to you just a one-page draft because, again, summary versions are always nice, especially for those of you who are already very familiar with the ins and outs of the process. We wanted to provide a summary version that would be a little bit more accessible to the general public, and that's what you see. That's what you see there. It highlights some of the key numbers in terms of the overall vacancy rate coming down across the county. It also highlights the overall amount of money that was recovered in 2018 as a result of the munitions process, the 10-day demand letters, the actual sheriff sales that were conducted. And you can see how those dollars are broken down in terms of when in the process those dollars came in. You see that on the bottom right-hand corner, just one example, one snapshot of, we could have chosen from a number of them, but one of the properties that is going through the rehabilitation process. In this case, it's a property, I believe in Councilman Cartier's district, 707 Prospect, that as you see on the left-hand side was quite overgrown with shrubbery and weeds and was definitely an eyesore and a complaint from the neighbors. And it is now in the process of being renovated. And hopefully we'll either go on the market shortly for either rental or home ownership. Diving a little bit deeper into the report, I've got just a couple of pages to share with you from the draft report. I skipped all the way to step four in the report for this body because you already know kind of the work that goes in behind the scenes until we get to the point of filing munitions and actually taking our properties to sheriff sale. And what you see in the right-hand side is a snapshot of an interactive map that is on the land use website. In this case, it highlights all of the properties that had some kind of attention through this program in the year in 2018. And so you can see, I know it's a little hard to see as you're looking at it on screen, but the different colored icons indicate whether a particular home is has been to sheriff's sale and has become a buyback property. Some of the ones like Carrie was describing where the county will then take some follow-on steps. We've got some that are still working through the munition process, which as you know takes a bit of time. Some that are on hold because maybe we're in negotiations with the homeowner to come in, to make their accounts current. And then some that paid off during the 10-day demand letter period, right? In some cases, all people needed was a bit of a nudge to say, we're on to you, we know you've got a large amount of unpaid taxes or code fees, and people then pay up. And then of course you can see those in green that went successfully to sheriff's sale and were purchased by third parties. So I share this not because we need to look at all of the detail, but to share that there is an interactive map that when the report is live, you'll be able to click straight into it. Again, it doesn't go into exact addresses, right? So they're not going to be able to look at People wouldn't be able to look at a particular address, but this gives a pretty good snapshot of the work that's been done. You know, as Carrie noted, we do have cases where properties come back to the county through sheriff sale. What we're showing in the graph on the left, the bottom left, is the actual the results from the 29 properties that went to sale. 18 of those went to third-party purchasers. 11 of those were purchased back by the county, where the amount owed was simply more than the market would bear for that particular neighborhood. We had a few sales also that were stayed at the last minute because a payment came in, say, the day before. Those are always really fun because it adds to the excitement of the work that has to happen behind the scenes before a sale. But then on the right-hand side, you can see the details, the specific addresses of those third-party purchases, as well as the ones that have come back to the county. And we don't need to do it in this forum on this busy day, but we can certainly answer any questions that you might have once you've had a chance to really dig into the report. If you want additional insight into where some of those buyback properties are in the process. Oh, one of those images didn't quite come through, but what we wanted to also share in the report, a couple of examples of success stories, places that have been through the process. And as you've known, as we have come before you on multiple times, we've got a lot of different outcomes here. You know, in some cases, people pay off during the 10-day demand period, and they immediately get to work on improving their property. In some cases, they pay up, and they don't immediately get to work. And that's one of the other questions that we're continuing to wrestle with, is what do we do if somebody pays up everything they owe, but then they fail to maintain their property, and Joe's team is continuing to go out and cite them for things, right? What are some mechanisms that we could use to continue to move those properties along? And in some cases, we've got the bottom one that you see there, for example, 312 Single. This is a property that we knocked down the house because it was unsafe. It went to sheriff sale as a vacant lot. It did not sell at sheriff sale. Thus, it came back to the county, and we worked with an MLS agent who listed it, and it sold in 1 or 2 days, Carrie, from the time it was listed. And that means, hopefully that new owner will choose to build a property that a new family can move into over time. So these are the kinds of things we'll also keep our eye on. Just one final slide. We wanted to close our report with a sense of what's next. We're not done. This is definitely not we're spiking the football and the program is complete. You all know that better than anybody. But just a sense of what's next. We do have at least 40 properties that are still, they meet our minimum criteria, and they're going to continue working their way through the demolition process. We've got more properties that are scheduled for demolition. Typically, once a house goes through demolition, they then meet the minimum criteria financially to enter the process. And some of those you see on the screen there. And then two policy areas that one of which you heard about already today, additional state legislation to allow for sewer delinquencies to be handled in a similar fashion. And so there's a resolution before this body for consideration tonight, and then the companion legislation will be considered at the General Assembly in the next couple of months. That, again, just puts another tool in the toolbox and helps us to, if there's a property that has a lot of back sewer fees, it allows us to consider that more freely as we're thinking about properties to prioritize. And then one other piece of state legislation, we're still working on the details, and look forward to working with the sheriff's office on this. We would really like to be able to require deed recordation post-sheriff sale. As we know that sometimes after sales, if deeds are not recorded, then we have trouble then following up with the right owner. If, let's say, a property then incurs additional code actions, we don't really know at that point who the proper owner is to send those notices to. So that's another piece of state legislation. We don't have that drafted yet. We've got some ongoing discussions happening, but look forward to coming back before you with a bit more detail for your support of that state legislation.
Mr. Smiley?
Yeah. Do you have any idea of a time frame that you're looking at for that?
For what specific?
To allow. Before they have to
requiring
record it.
I don't know what the current legislation reads to you.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I think NJ's been in touch, Mayor Jacobson on our team has been in touch and looking at some things that...
I mean, I've been trying to push this for 10 years. I've been through 3 chairs trying to get it. I mean, and part of the justification, if I'm going to do on this, part of the justification for this is you've got people that ride around looking for a home, their first home. If they pull up to a house and they can put it in the county system and find out who owns it then, so they know who to reach out to get that house, there's a chance that house will go somewhere. I mean, I've talked to people, but they move on to another community if it's not available. And that's part of the push that I've had. Mm-hmm. You know, you at least have the possibility of someone contacting an owner to buy that house if you've got the appropriate information. I can tell you, my daughter's house, the one she currently has, went to foreclosure. The bank let it lay in the prior owner's name. She went to settlement. After she went to settlement, it went from the prior owner to the bank to her. Just leapfrogged right through. So, I mean, just, I think that's a big argument, or a big reason, not argument to have it, but fair, but not overly generous with the amount of time. That's all I'm saying.
I'm trying to address that as well, because we have properties out there that have been posted for sheriff sales. In fact, myself, when I was a deputy, I posted one house once every year for 3 years in a row. So basically, that house sat there vacant, which allowed, you know, drug problems and deterioration and the property values around it to go down. And that's one of the issues that I wanted to address. Of course, the banking has a big lobby, so I don't know that's going to take a lot of work to do that. But that definitely needs to take place. I agree with you 100%.
I agree. And I
I'm thinking 180 days, you know, maybe. And then it has to go back to square one.
Yeah, I mean, how long does it take when legitimately, if I go to settlement today, how long does it take to get that deed recorded? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you look at a normal sale, how much time does that take, and then give a little bit of room? But other than that, it needs to go. And I don't laugh at you posting for 3 years. I laugh because when my daughter found the first home she wanted to buy, I went and looked at it, brought the information back to her. It was vacant. She went and looked at it, and her and my wife came in the house screaming and yelling, waving this paper. It was a sheriff's sale post. They took off the door. She said they weren't taking her house. She hadn't even... So, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no law that requires them to record the current.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and that's been
right.
10 years.
That's,
yep. Trying to get people that can change it to understand there's a reason for it. But like you said, you're battling the realtors, the banks, and you're battling everyone but the people who live around those vacant homes that are still in the deceased person, or whatever, that's still in a name that you can't get a hold of them.
Well, sometimes we'll put the foreclosure posting on it. We've spoken to the people who are in default. They leave, and then it goes to sheriff's sale. The bank buys it back, and then it just sits
and
there.
It sits.
And all they do is just make sure that the grass is cut. But I've spoken with people, for example, in Edgemoor Gardens, where he had a house next to him that was vacant for like 3 or 4 years already, and he's telling me about the rodent problem. He said, look in the window, you see all the trash in there. It's just been there for 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
So yeah,
and
we're aware of it.
And keeping the grass cut, you know, when they first get it, if it's there, they'll sign that contract. But after they spend money that first season, they void that contract. And then we're spending the taxpayer money on code. So we all know it's a vicious cycle. I applaud what you're doing. Anything I can do to help, whether that means go to Dover or stay away from Dover, I recognize my personality, so
right.
Whatever it takes. But that is well past due for the citizens of this state.
Mr. Cartier.
I just want to underscore the problem of this, the magnitude of this problem. You have one kind of issue of, you know, related to, you know, foreclosures, sheriff sales, you know, and the financial industry. The other thing is you have individuals out here who build a business model on acquiring properties at sheriff sales and they don't file a deed.
Yeah.
And then they use that to evade responsibility for, you know, condition of the property with Newcastle County Code. So You know, if there's any way I could help you with our state legislators, you know, concern, I, you know, we got to really get engaged in this. We need to require that when you take a property through sheriff's sale, you acquire it there, you need to file a deed. It's the bottom line. I don't know why, at the end of the day, you know, the legislature would have a major problem with this, except, I don't know, if they're listening more to the banks and their constituents, but I can't help.
Yeah, it has to be a cooperative effort, and I definitely look forward to working with you.
And I think a few well-placed examples, too, of you know, situations where a deed has not been recorded and bad things have happened as a result. That would, that the, being able to articulate that would probably be really helpful for our state legislative colleagues.
Anyone else? Ms. Durham?
Real quickly, you and I have talked about this before, but I just thought I'd mention it again for the record that on the rare instances where some of these houses that the county takes ownership of and then resells, if they are in a historic district or eligible for overlay zoning, it would be great if, as part of the process, an overlay was put on them and gives them more protection in the future moving forward. So if we could, happy to work with you on that or with land use to make that happen as we need to.
We are always evolving and learning from, you know, learning from each of these experiences, and have a, you know, that's one of our last bullets there is continue to monitor the program and adjust as needed. And so I appreciate that, the input.
Everybody good? And can we move on? Southern Library update. Mr. Henry, are you up again?
Marcus Henry, Joe Mandrick, Community Services. What I'll try to do at our community services, have like monthly updates with respect to the progress in the library project. It's just brief updates. I'm happy to say that pending contract execution, we should be hoping next few days, Tetra Tech and Perkins and Will will be the architect on this project for the Southern Library. If you remember, they did the Route 9 Library, so we're pleased to have them engaged for the Southern Library project. Also, pending contract execution, we actually have a new firm, Wilson Construction, not new, but respected doing libraries lately for the county. Wilson Construction, we're doing the construction management for this library. We're going to have a public engagement meeting, the first one for this. It's going to be April 8th. I think council will send an email and make sure there's a follow-up there. This is the opportunity for the community to engage with respect to what they want to see with design and programming in the new library. That's going to be April 8th.
Take a picture to Kirkwood Highway Library, Dan.
Come on. 6 to 8.
Be nice to her. My regrettable thing for the rest of my life.
It'll be 6 to 8, April 8th, at the Volunteer Hose Company in Middletown.
The more I ride by, the more I like.
Also want to mention that next week, we still have pending funds with the state, $5.9 million. It's with the state and the governor's FY20 budget. It's going to be in front of the Bonneville Committee April 2nd next week. I plan on attending. But if anybody would like to come down, just let us know. We've also executed a memorandum of understanding with the Friends Group for their capital campaign for this library. It's a $750,000 capital campaign. We do have a proposed schedule right now. I'll just, you know, this is preliminary right now. We're looking at conceptual design, design development. It's probably going to run through the fall of this year through 2019. We'll have design completion and bid starting probably about the first of 2020, January 2020. Construction expected to start in April 2020, about a 14-month construction schedule, with move-in and construction completion probably about mid-May, with total completion by July of 2021 that we're looking at right now.
Thank you for that update. And community intervention and outreach program.
One more thing I forgot, and you may have seen this, I hope we emailed you. The Route 9 Library is actually a finalist. We were nominated by Representative Blunt Rochester, Congresswoman, for the 2019 Institute of Museums and Libraries National Medal for innovative programs and services. We're a top 30 finalist for this, so if we get noticed, I'll let council know. That's very exciting. First time ever for Delaware.
I'll ask a Councilman Smiley sort of question. Would that come with a cash prize that we could use to work
What's the metal made out of?
Yeah, right. Another question.
I got pawn shops in my district.
All right. Anything else?
I have one more.
One more, yes.
On community intervention outreach. This is just an update again. I'm very proud of this initiative. I have to thank, I thank council, obviously, but I have to thank Councilman Cartier, and I'm sorry Councilman Street's not here, because I think this program is an extreme success the past year. And just for some background, the community intervention outreach team is comprised right now of three contracted individuals, Mr. Muhammad Salam, Mr. Rashid Mustafa, and Mr. Daniel Elkins. And he continued to work with our at-risk population that provide a variety of outreach services while maintaining a primary focus on youth in this community. They began working April 2018 in Edgemoor Gardens and the surrounding area and have expanded their efforts the last several months in the Route 9 corridor. The outreach team's focus is to increase youth programming options to expose and engage youth to as many different areas as possible, including athletics, recreation, educational, and cultural activities. These programs include, which expanded from the previous program, they now include an art club, a chess club, a bike club, track and field, basketball, flag football, lacrosse, karate, gloves against drugs, and program straight talk. So we're proud they've expanded the program here. But specific to Edgemoor, I want to highlight a few things. The tremendous success of the Newcastle County Edgemoor Track and Field program. Area youth attended track and field practices at the Mount Pleasant Elementary School and competed in the weekly meets hosted by the City of Wilmington last summer. Also, youth were able to participate in our summer youth program last year and got gainful employment, so we're happy about that. And the outreach team played a pivotal role in facilitating the construction of the Edgemoor Gardens Park and Playground, which is scheduled to open in April. I know we're having a grand opening for that, and the community obviously is excited as heck about that. It'll include a full basketball court, a mini soccer field, playground, walking path, and a pavilion as well. And I think we'll get noticed when that's scheduled with respect to the grand opening. For the Route 9 corridor and the work that they're doing, they've begun their expansion efforts there. They engage the community, work with various community groups, civics, and organizations to strengthen existing partnerships. The outreach team is currently working with the Rose Hill Community Center, the Route 9 Library directly, the Police Athletic League, and other groups. The outreach team has also been attending the All Civic Association meetings to figure out new ways to engage with the 19 communities within the Route 9 corridor. They're also engaged currently with the Newcastle County Prevention Coalition on potential programming opportunities. The team has also developed a relationship with the Delaware Cooperative Extension 4-H program. Plans are underway for 4-H to host a bi-weekly culinary club at the Route 9 eatery. And the group is also working to establish a presence at the 4-H after-school program located at the Eisenberg Elementary School in partnership with PAL. In addition, the chess club meets at the Route 9 Library every Wednesday, and plans are underway to develop a youth theatrical club which will practice and perform at the Black Box Route 9 Library. The team is also involved with the Sunday afternoon drop-in youth basketball at the PAL Center and the summer youth basketball program at the Rose Hill Community Center. I just want to mention, like, a few weeks ago, there was a recognition of the tremendous work of these outreach specialists. They are recognized by the Delaware Recreation and Park Society Achievement Award at the annual DRPS conference in March 2019. I was happy to say Councilman Street and Executive Meyer joined us for this presentation. And I'll keep updates you as we proceed with this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Henry? All right. Anything under other? Yes, Mr. Carter.
I really want to thank you for all the work on this other library. My constituents down there are still pinching themselves.
Yep.
But I think it's real. And I also wanted to compliment all your staff for the Teen Magazine release the other night. It was 5 months. I've attended a lot of events. It was just an incredible event to see, you know, what the teens have done with the libraries, just their writing, their art, speaking from the heart. Honest, it was just a wonderful evening, great work. Really appreciate it, and I can't wait to go sometime in an actual Southern Library downtown.
For the MSE program, we had 150 participants in this. That's the most ever.
Excellent.
And I'm very proud of that program. It was poetry and writing and artwork. It was well attended. Thank you.
We had to hold it at St. Yeah. Right. It was too big, and we didn't have the facility, yeah. But it was just a wonderful event. I just love this.
Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to take this opportunity to publicly thank Carrie Casey for her work that she's been doing in homelessness in the state of Delaware and the recognition that she's recently received on that. I mean, that is just phenomenal. Thank you, Carrie. Let's give her a round of applause. Doing the good work with her.
By the way, Carrie does that on her own time. She volunteers her time through COC to do this work, mm-hmm. And they're successful. I guess about a month and a half ago, largest grant award ever for the state of Delaware to help end homelessness here. And that's thanks to her work in that group. So, kudos.
President Hartley Nagel.
Yeah, I just want to thank her again because there was a woman that it was the coldest, probably the coldest weekend of the year. and she called me and was going to be put out the next day. And you were able to get her housing, and I think permanent housing now. And, you know, she had a daughter that was disabled and two grandchildren with her. So I really thank you for that. That was amazing, and how you did it so quickly.
That's why we love community service.
That is.
Anything else? Any public comment?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Back at 4 o'clock for executive.
Exactly.
Follow you.